You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 25th of May 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I thought today we could talk a little bit about ethnostates, and particularly about Israel. And also, maybe we'll get into Zionism. There is confusion about Zionism. A lot of civic nationalists will say, I'm a Zionist, and what they mean is they support the right of Jews or to have their own homeland, to have their own country that is exclusively for Jews, and they support that. But what a lot of people think when somebody says, I'm a Zionist, they mean that they support putting the needs of Israel above the needs of everybody else. And we have this issue of international Zionism, where we have people that put Israel's needs, or appear to be putting Israel's needs, above the needs of the country which they reside in. And that gets called Zionism as well. Now, if Zionism is just supporting the right of Israel to be an ethnostate, then I support the right of Israel to be an ethnostate, but clearly I don't think it's right for other countries and other nations to put the needs of Israel above their own needs. And I think that's a reasonable position to take. I don't think that's an anti-Semitic position to take. And I will probably get called a Zionist for saying that I support the right of Jews to have their own country and their own ethnostate. But I think it's hypocritical to deny a people group, any people group, what we ourselves as a people group desire. As I say, the issue comes in when our countries appear to be putting the needs of Israel above the needs of their own people. And particularly we see this in America, when America goes to war, essentially funds people to go to war against Bashar al-Assad because that's in the interests of Israel. And of course, is that in the interests of America? Well, America says that it is because they have to back the only democracy in the Middle East. And we can look at Israel itself, and it does have a lot of right-wing policies. It's very nationalist, and I support nationalists being nationalist. Again, the issue comes in when you have people that are highly positioned in other countries that appear to be putting Israel's needs first. And you can't criticize Jews for doing that. Of course, they're going to use their influence and power to do what they think is best for their homeland. You can't criticize them for doing that. What you can criticize is white politicians that appear to be going along with that and putting Israel's needs above the needs of America, say, or above the needs of Britain. But to get into what the actual law is over in Israel, I've got an article here from a few years back. It's from Vox, and it was when Israel brought in its nation state law. Israel passed a controversial new nation state law last week that is sparking both celebration and fierce debate over the very nature of Israel itself. The law does three big things. Number one, it states that the right to exercise national self-determination in Israel is unique to the Jewish people. So that is an ethnostate. The Jews themselves have the right to self-determination. That means they have the right to make their own laws, and nobody else can interfere. And that is nationalism, basically. That is a nationalist state. It establishes Hebrew as Israel's official language and downgrades Arabic, a language widely spoken by Arab Israelis, to a special status. Now, you would expect them to have their own language and their own language to take precedence. And one of the policies of Patriotic Alternative is that we would like to make English the official language in Britain, with special status for Welsh and Gaelic, and to have everything written in English. So if you have people that then do wish to emigrate to Britain, they have to learn how to speak English. They cannot expect to have translator fees paid for them, to have everything translated for them into the language of their choice. They should have to learn the language of the country that they're in. When in Rome, behave as a Roman. So I think it's reasonable for the Jews to do this. Number three, it establishes Jewish settlement as a national value and mandates that the state will labour to encourage and promote its establishment and development. And this is to do with Jews wishing to settle land that they view as being historically theirs. But of course, this is where the problems come in, because you have the Palestinians that are living on that land. And Trump's plan was to pay the Palestinians billions of dollars in order to stop trying to get the land back, basically, and to live in separate areas that would then get funds for economic development. And I do think that the Palestinians would probably be better off accepting that, to be honest, because I don't think they're going to be able to take their land back. I think they just have to accept that the Israelis are a more powerful force than they are, especially when they have the backing of America. So this settlement idea does cause a lot of issues. I know that the Jews would rather just buy the land and settle it, but it is not that easy sometimes. And they also take it by force, but they see it as theirs. And when you look at what white people did going into America, going into New Zealand, going into Australia, they just took the land. And I know that the way that the Jews see it is very similar. When they went there in the 1920s, they saw Palestinians with donkeys and carts, not really living in a very advanced state. They were traveling about living in tents, and they weren't taking the resources from the land. And you had these Jews that had access to modern civilization, and they built a modern civilization. You have to give them credit for that. They did build a modern civilization in an area that was still living in the equivalent of the European Middle Ages. So they developed the land. And that was the same argument that white people had when we went to America. We said, well, these people are not using this land. We need this land for our people. They are not making use of the resources. So we will try to come to a treaty with them, and we will use the land and utilize the land. And of course, then there were the Red Indian Wars, and there were all these problems with it. And the Jews are encountering similar problems. So I think we have to look at it in that way, rather than looking at it as Jews are doing something terrible by doing this. There's arguments on both sides, and we have to accept our own history and look back at how we settled these countries and look at what the Jews are doing in that light, I think. Each of these statements would be contentious on its own, but taken together they are a clear, unequivocal statement of how the Jewish state's current leaders see both the country and the diverse people who call it home. Because, of course, the problem is that they do have Arab citizens. So they are effectively saying that the Arab citizens are going to be the equivalent of guests. They're not going to have any say in the making of the laws, and it's a Jewish state for Jews. So it is clearly an ethno-state, but you still have problems there because it is multicultural. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right government backed the legislation and was overjoyed at the law's passing. Netanyahu lauded the law as a defining moment in the history of the state, a phrase that was splashed across the front pages of Israel Hayom, the country's most read newspaper, which is often described as Netanyahu's Fox News for its favourable coverage of his government. So the mainstream media, I mean, this is Vox, they do describe Netanyahu's government. Obviously, he's not in power anymore, but they describe it as a far-right government. I don't think Israel's leaders are really a problem for nationalists in other countries. When you look at the Israeli nationalists, they talk about the same things that white nationalists talk about. There was a settler rabbi that was on Professor Edward Dutton's Jolly Heretic series. It was a very enlightening program. There are lots of similarities that they have to white nationalists in the West. It's always the internationalists that are causing problems, the globalists. And the issue is you have a lot of globalists that support globalism for everyone else, but they don't support it for Israel. And of course, that's because supporting globalism for everyone else weakens the other people groups whilst strengthening the group that is ethnocentric, which are like the Jews in Israel. For Israeli Arabs, who make up one fifth of Israel's 9 million citizens, the new law was a slap in the face. When the law was passed, Arab parliamentary members ripped up copies of the bill and shouted apartheid on the floor of the Knesset. Ayman Oda, the leader of a coalition of primarily Arab parties currently in the opposition, said in a statement that Israel had passed a law of Jewish supremacy and told us that we will always be second-class citizens. Well, they basically passed a law saying that Jews and Jews only are going to be responsible for making the laws in a Jewish state. And it has always been set up to be a Jewish state meant for Jews, so that's just the way that it is. These Arabs could always move to a primarily Arab state. And this is the Jewish argument. There are lots of Arab states out there. There's Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Syria. I mean, the list is, I couldn't remember all of them, but there are all these different countries that Arabs already have that are Arab ethnostates, essentially. So this is the Jewish argument. We only want to have this one country. Why can we not have it? I think they should have it. In the same way, I think that every people group should have its own country and should be solely responsible for making its own laws. The problems come in when we try to impose our cultural values on people who have different cultural values. We see this a lot in Africa at the moment. We see America trying to enforce liberalism on African countries, and the African countries don't want the liberalism. And again, this causes problems because it means the African countries don't get the aid that they need in order to build up their economies, because they don't want to legalize things like homosexual propaganda to children. Palestinians, liberal American Jews, and many Israelis on the left also denounced the law as racist and undemocratic. Yohanan Plesner, the head of the non-partisan Jerusalem-based Israel Democracy Institute, called the new law jingoistic and divisive and an unnecessary embarrassment to Israel. But the law is there just to make it exclusively Jewish. It means that the country can have an exclusively Jewish flavour, and they've got a chance to set it up in the way that they want to set it up with the laws that they want to put in place. At the core of the new law is a deep existential debate that Israelis have grappled with almost since the country's founding. Can Israel be both a Jewish state that protects and celebrates Jewish identity and a liberal democracy that protects the rights of all minorities, including non-Jews? Well, they do still have these Arab citizens there, and they're not saying that these Arab citizens are not going to be protected by the law. They're just saying that they're not going to have a say in making the laws. And why should they have a say in making the laws for Jews to follow? Founded in 1948 in the wake of the Holocaust, Israel has long struggled with its self-identification as both a Western-style democracy that affords equal rights to all citizens, regardless of race or religion, and a country envisioned as a refuge for Jews. Waves of Jewish immigrants from Arab countries, as well as from Russia, Eastern Europe, South America, and Ethiopia, have kept Israel's Jewish population growing. Under Israel's law of return, any Jew can easily become an Israeli citizen. And again, that's really good. We should have it that in white countries that white people can come back to them. For instance, we should make it so that South Africans can come back to their country of origin. If they want to come back to Germany, or if they want to come back to Holland, or come back to Britain. At the moment, it's only Russia that's actually taking in these South African refugees. And the Israeli Jews want Jews in the diaspora to become aware of their ethnicity. They want them to be proud of being Jewish, and they want them to move to Israel and take part in the ethno-state there. And again, how can I be opposed to that? I am supportive of that. I wish everyone to become aware of their ethnicity and to take their identity from that and to do their best for their people group. And that's exactly what these Israeli Jews are wanting to do. In fact, they have arguments with the liberal Jews in America, and that there is a problem with liberal Jews not marrying other Jews, not staying true to their traditions and all the rest of it. And I'm certainly not against Israeli Jews who are trying to encourage other Jews to be nationalists, basically, and come to Israel and help them out. During Israel's war for independence, which the Palestinians call the Nakba, or the catastrophe, 700,000 Palestinians were expelled or fled their homes. Today, their descendants remain refugees, and many still live in urban, slum-like refugee camps across the Middle East. Palestinians who remained in Israel in 1948 were offered citizenship and now make up 21% of the population. And here we see the problems of multiculturalism. When you have different groups living within one territory, there are conflicts that are going to inevitably arise. And you have this conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians all living within the one territory. I mean, we have conflicts between, well, we did have conflicts between the Irish and the English. For decades, we had the Troubles, and the Irish and the English are very alike one another. Jews and Palestinians are not very alike one another. The Ashkenazi Jews have a significant amount of European biology that makes them up, and the Palestinians are very different. They're far more Arabic than anything else. So the more difference there is between people groups, the more likely problems are going to arise. As I say, the English and the Irish are very, very close to one another, have very close culture, and yet because they're living within the same territory and they're two distinct different people groups, problems arose. It is just not helpful to have multicultural states. And Israel is trying to deal with that, I think, by making the state an exclusively Jewish state. In the decades since its founding, Israel has fought several wars with its Arab neighbours and battled Palestinian uprisings and terror attacks. And again, Palestinians do fire rockets into Israel. Yes, the Israelis fight back and kill them at a rate of like 10 to 1, but the Palestinians are still attacking them, and the Jews are basically just protecting themselves from them. It doesn't matter if somebody's throwing rocks or firing guns at you. You are going to want to defend yourself. So I can't, again, I can't really criticize the Israelis for defending what they see as their homeland against attacks from these Palestinians. And they have offered the Palestinians large amounts of money to stop doing this. That's what Trump's peace deal was. Today, Arab Israelis have a different legal status from the 350,000 Palestinians who live under Israeli occupation in East Jerusalem, the 2.5 million who live in the Palestinian Authority-administered West Bank, and the 1.9 million who live in the blockaded Gaza Strip under the rule of Hamas, which the US and several other Western countries have designated a terrorist organization. So you have basic different legal status for the different peoples that live in the country. Those populations of Palestinians are technically stateless. This means that, for instance, Palestinians in East Jerusalem cannot vote in Israeli national elections or obtain Israeli passports, amongst other restrictions. For Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, it means that major parts of their lives are controlled by Israel, a country that they have no direct voice in. But that's because it's an ethnostate. What they need is their own territory. And they have been offered various territories. I mean, they could always move to one of these other Arab countries and be Palestinians in one of these other countries. You have Jordanians, you have Syrians, you have all these various different types of Arabs and communities of them that live within other countries. And you also have the Kurds. The Kurds don't have a distinct country of their own. They have various territories, some of them in Turkey, some of them in Iran, some of them in Syria, and they still remain a distinct group. And the Palestinians could do something like that. I really do think they would be better off accepting the money and the investment and ceasing to fight against the Israeli Jews. Arab Israelis, on the other hand, are citizens of Israel and therefore, at least in theory, have access to the same passports, elections, education, healthcare, infrastructure and security as Jewish Israelis. But while they certainly enjoy more rights than Palestinians in East Jerusalem, who in turn have it better than Palestinians in the West Bank, who have it far better than Palestinians in Gaza, Arab Israelis say that since the state's founding, in practice, they have not been afforded the same rights as Jewish Israelis. This is one reason why many Arab Israelis refer to themselves as Palestinians with Israeli citizenship. Well, why would they have the same rights as Jewish Israelis if the Jewish Israelis are setting up a country specifically for Jewish Israelis? These other citizens there, they're citizens, but they have a different status, clearly, because they're not Jews. I do think the Palestinians would just be so much better off if they just took the funding and used that funding to build up their economy, build up their industry in the areas that the Jews are putting aside for them. It's exactly the same thing as the Americans setting up reservations for the Red Indians after the Indian Wars. I think the Palestinians have just got to accept that the Israelis have the greater firepower, the greater force, and just accept the money and leave them to it. Well, here's what the new law actually says. It's worth breaking down the three parts of the law and examining each one individually to get a better sense of what the law actually says and what it all means. Number one, the right to exercise national self-determination in the state of Israel is unique to the Jewish people. This declaration doesn't just say that Israel is the historic homeland of Jews, which is a core part of Zionist ideology, and the argument for the Jewish state's existence in what is now Israel. Instead, this goes further to unequivocally state that Jews, and only Jews, have the exclusive right to self-determination within Israel. And it's only if you have a multicultural state that you actually have to come out with something like that. I doubt whether in China they have had to say that only the Chinese have the exclusive right to self-determination. And it just seems logical that only one people group would have the right to determine what the laws are going to be for that one people group. In other words, only Jews have the right to determine what kind of state and society they live under, which means that by default, non-Jews, such as Palestinian citizens of Israel, some of whom are Muslim and some of whom are Christian, do not have that same right. Supporters of this declaration say that Jews have the right to a place of their own, just like other people have, and that enshrining this principle in the law is necessary to ensure that Israel remains under Jewish control. And yeah, I agree with that. I just think that other countries also need to have something like this put into law. They've done so in Russia. In Russia, they have come out with a new constitution, and it states that Russia is a country that was built by the Russians, and it's a Christian civilization, and it will remain a Christian civilization with Christian traditions. And essentially, it's fairly similar to what the Israelis have done here. But they're saying they want a right to a place of their own just like other people have. And it does seem as if other countries have this, but in Europe, we have multiculturalism. And really, we should be pointing out that Israel has this, and why should we not have this? And of course, people say, well, this is where the hypocrisy comes in, because we have left-wing Jews in our countries that support Israel, but at the same time they support multiculturalism in the countries in which they reside. But that is just something that they are always going to do, because they're going to put the needs of their own people first, and that is what they should be doing. They should be putting the needs of their own people first. I don't think it's hypocritical of them to promote multiculturalism in the countries in which they are citizens, because that is going to weaken their competitors, isn't it? And the whole the whole of life is basically a competition between these different people groups. And the name of the game is to weaken your competitors and to strengthen your own hand. And you cannot expect Jews to not do that. It's just being a sore loser, really, to complain that the people we are competing against are doing well and they should stop doing so well. What we have to do is try to do the same, be ethnocentric, take our identity from our ethnicity and do whatever we can to increase our influence and our power and to try and get a similar law passed in European countries, that European countries also need to be a homeland for Europeans. Critics, on the other hand, say this measure is undemocratic and essentially enshrines two separate classes of citizens, Jews and everyone else. Some even liken it to the strict racial segregation in South Africa under apartheid, in which the indigenous black African population was ruled by a colonial regime based on white supremacy. And why shouldn't they have two separate classes of citizen? If you are a homeowner, you have your home, you have your family, and you have guests that you invite into the home. And guests are treated with hospitality. They're often treated as honoured guests, but they are classed as guests. They don't have a say in how the home is run. That is the business of the homeowner. And it is the same thing with a country. A country is built by a nation, and the Jews did build the country of Israel. There was nothing there, pretty much. It was just desert before they got there. They've built the country of Israel. They built the cities of Tel Aviv. And they should have a right to make whatever laws they want. And they should have a right to expel anybody that doesn't wish to go along with it, to be honest. Number two, Hebrew is the language of the state, while the Arabic language has a special status in the state. And as I pointed out, I mean, this is pretty much what we have in the United Kingdom. English is the language of the state, but Welsh Gaelic have special status within the United Kingdom, and people are taught to speak Welsh in the schools in Wales. For 70 years, both Hebrew and Arabic were designated as official languages in Israel, and this law just changed that. Arabic is widely spoken by Palestinians in Israel, as well as by some Jewish Israelis with roots in Arab countries. Yet the assumption in Israel has long been that you need to know Hebrew to get a good education and a job, and to be able to interact with official government bureaucracies, which largely conduct business only in Hebrew. Well, why should they have to pay for translators? If people want to do business with Jews in Israel, then they should learn to speak the language that the Jewish Israelis speak. I think the Hebrew that they're referring to here is actually Yiddish. I may be wrong, but I think ancient Hebrew was never spoken, and it wasn't used for thousands of years. The old Hebrew is closer to Phoenician, and that's certainly not what they are speaking now. Again, this is not unreasonable to expect people to learn to speak your language in your country. Arabic's special status under the new law ensures that some things like road signs will remain in both languages. Again, so that's the same as in Wales. You have both the Welsh language and the English language on the road signs. But Arab Israelis say that stripping Arabic of its official status is meant to erase their identities and histories. They also say it will put them at an economic disadvantage because Hebrew is often not taught well in schools in Arab Israeli communities. Well, the Arabs need to get better teachers then, don't they? They need to learn to speak Hebrew better instead of complaining that the Israeli Jews aren't doing it. They need to form their own advocacy groups and start improving things for themselves rather than expecting somebody else to do it for them. Number three, the law mandates that the state views Jewish settlement as a national value and will labour to encourage and promote its establishment and development without specifying where. And the logic behind this is Jews say, well, this is the Israeli Jews. They say, throughout our history, there have been pogroms and Jews have been removed from the countries that they are in. And throughout our history, we have not had a homeland that we could then go to when this happened. So their logic now is that they need to settle areas for in case there is another pogrom and lots of Jews need to come to Israel from Europe or from America. So they're basically just thinking ahead. It's the same thing, really, as when white people went to America, because we said, well, we are continuously expanding, we're continually producing more British, more Germans, and we need more space. So we need to settle another country. And that was the logic behind it. And it's a similar logic here. They're saying that the Jewish nation in Israel will be likely to expand in the future. So we need to think ahead now, and we need to settle places for these Jews to come and live. Again, you can look at China. China has built all these giant ghost towns, basically, that has nobody living in them, because they're preparing for the future. They are preparing for millions of new Chinese who are going to be wanting somewhere to live. This clause, the settlement clause, interestingly, has angered both the law's supporters and its opponents. The former say it doesn't go far enough because it doesn't specify Jewish settlements in the West Bank. This is a fundamental issue for many religious and religious nationalist Israelis. They argue that the West Bank is part of Israel, both because Israel captured the land in 1967 and because it is part of the biblical Holy Land. And since it belongs to Israel, the argument goes, Jewish Israelis are free to build settlements, small enclaves, in the West Bank. And again, they did capture the land in 1967. And if you go to war with somebody and you capture the land, then it's your land, traditionally. That's the whole point of it. If you defeat them in battle, then you can take the land, which is, again, what they're doing. Most of the international community, as well as Palestinians and more than a few Israelis, disagree. They say that the West Bank belongs to a future Palestinian state and that Israel has been illegally occupying it since it seized the territory in 1967. As such, Jewish settlements in the West Bank are illegal under international law. Well, international law is just a series of treaties between countries. No other nation has a right to judge another nation, basically. The Jews have their own laws that they judge themselves under, and the law has always been, the law of nature is that whichever is the stronger force defeats the weaker force. And the Israelis did defeat the Palestinians, and they did seize that territory. So it is their right under the rules of nature to do what they want on that territory. By not specifically mentioning the West Bank, this provision in the new law walks a fine line, enshrining Jewish settlement as a national value without explicitly saying where those settlements might be. Even so, opponents of this measure say it is damaging not just with respect to West Bank settlements, but also for Arab Israelis, as the law appears to create a legal right to separate Arabs from living in Jewish communities. Well, again, if they wish to live separately, make their own laws, then they're going to encourage Arabs to live amongst other Arabs rather than living within the Jewish communities. Supporters of the law say that this is what a strong Jewish state looks like. The bill was passed on July the 19th, and I believe this was in 2018, with a vote of 62 to 55 after years of political debate. The law was first proposed in 2011. Netanyahu was ecstatic. Today we made it law. This is our nation, our language, and our flag, he said in a statement. In recent years, there have been some who have attempted to put this in doubt to undercut the core of our being. And regardless of who it is, I mean, that is what is important. The nation, the language, the flag, looking out for the best interests of your people. And Israel is one of the few countries in the world that really does look out for the best interests of its people. If the Palestinians fire a rocket at the Israelis and they kill one Israeli, then the Israelis are going to build a giant wall around the area. They're going to build a giant dome to protect themselves from the rockets. They're going to lock the Palestinians away. They are not going to allow them to even touch the hair on one of the heads of their Israeli Jewish citizens. And you really cannot knock that. That is solid, solid ethnocentrism there, looking out for the interests of their people group above all else. And that is the way people should be. We should be looking out for the interests of our family first, putting our families first, and then showing our concern for the other families of the world. In an age of hyper-populism where identity politics has made a resurgence, as the liberal democracies of the post-World War II order face fundamental challenges from within, the nation-state law is a perfect power play for Netanyahu's kind of nationalism, even if its actual application remains unclear. Well, I think the application is very clear. It's basically made Israel into an ethno-state. It has put it into law that it is only the Jews that have self-determination there, that only the Jews will make the laws for Jews to obey, and that the country will have a distinct Jewish flavor. And that's basically, I think, how all nations should be. And that is their argument, that other nations have this. And the issue we have as white nationalists is that in European countries and in white countries, we no longer have this. We have multiculturalism. We are not allowed self-determination. We are not allowed to make our own laws. We are told that we have to include all these other people groups who, of course, are going to have different interests to our own. And just because we don't have self-determination, we really shouldn't be criticizing the Jews for having self-determination. We should be pointing out that what they are doing is eminently sensible, and we should be doing the same and living in the same way and putting the needs of our people first and not the needs of other people's. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.